underscored enrichment as an unalienable right and a core principle. He emphasized Tehran's goodwill and commitment to the current indirect talks with the U.S., saying his country is ready to continue negotiations at shorter intervals to remove Washington's illegal and unjust sanctions. He, however, added that the time and the venue of the talks should be determined by both sides. The spokesman also responded to Israel's recent threats, warning that any adventurism and wrong action against Tehran would be met with a crushing response. Begay added that Israel is attempting to divert attention from its ongoing genocide in Gaza while simultaneously undermining diplomatic efforts in the region. The third Iran-Africa Economic Cooperation Conference has kicked off in Tehran as Iran seeks to broaden its economic relations with Africa. Over 700 business people from 38 African nations are taking part in the four-day event. Fateh Masumi reports.
The Iran-Africa Economic Cooperation Summit has kicked off in Tehran with its aim on four main areas of oil, gas and petrochemicals, mining and mineral industries, agriculture and energy. The event was attended by high-ranking officials from Iran and also representatives from over 50 African countries, including heads of chambers of commerce, with aims to bolster economic ties between Iran and Africa. The Iranian President Masoud Pezeshkian was the keynote speaker.
We are ready to share with you all the achievements we have made, to share with you what we possess in the areas of healthcare, trade, industry, agriculture, in order to create a world where all people on earth can coexist in prosperity.
Iran possesses abundant resources in oil, gas, and minerals, along with the necessary expertise and technology, and it aims to use these capabilities not for domination, but for collaborative and brotherly partnership, calling for a tenfold increase in trade exchanges with African countries. Iran also expressed its readiness to participate in the African countries and cooperate in the field of implementation of water and soil projects. The event is set to continue in the central Iranian city of Isfahan between April 30th and May 1st.
We have been able to create a new banking ecosystem to facilitate trade and economic diplomatic relations with African countries. This technology is a strategic and soft technology that includes a package of technical, engineering and informatics services, and this opens up the path for economic and commercial interactions in the African region.
The Iran-Africa Economic Cooperation Summit is considered a turning point in structuring Iran's collaborations with the continent. Meanwhile, Africa offers a unique opportunity for developing countries to expand their trade.
In light of the significant increase in trade activities between Iran and Africa, businesses are presented with immense opportunities to explore various ventures. The third Iran-Africa Economic Cooperation Conference highlights precisely this potential. Fateh Masumi, Tehran.
More Palestinian civilians are massacred in Gaza as the Israeli military presses ahead with its relentless air and artillery strikes on the besieged territory. At least 23 Gazans, including women and children, have been killed in a series of Israeli strikes since early morning, with most attacks targeting residential areas. Among the hardest hit areas was the Jabalia refugee camp, while a separate strike struck the southern city of Khan Yunis. Meanwhile, rescue teams in Khan Yunis recovered the bodies of four Palestinians from the rubble of an earlier Israeli bombardment. That brings the total death toll in Gaza to over 52,200 people since the regime began its genocidal onslaught in October 2023. At least 117,600 others have also been injured. Apart from death and destruction, Palestinians in the Gaza Strip are constantly grappling with hunger and thirst. Some of them have talked about their struggles in finding food in the besieged Strip every day. Let us take a listen.
I live in a small tent with my children. We freeze from the cold. We get water only once every 3 days. The children struggle when they go to get us a bit of water to drink. We receive no aid. Our children go to sleep hungry.
Before the war, I used to come here every day, but now not as much, maybe twice, because we hear the bombings. So we get scared and decide to stay at home. It depends.
I'm afraid they'll die of hunger. He doesn't know what meat is. We've forgotten meat, chicken, everything, and I'm afraid something will happen to my son's children because of the lack of food and nutrition.
We are suffering. There is no water, no medicine, no crossings open, no medicine to spray the seeds. Suffering is in the highest level. Water is available one day and then not the next day. As for medicine, we overcome this disease every year. If the crossings were open and medicine was entering, we could overcome it. Every 2 days we spray the crops, but to no avail. We only lose money. Tomatoes are expensive, but their expenses are higher.
The International Court of Justice has begun a week of public hearings on Israel's legal obligations to provide humanitarian aid in occupied Palestinian territories. The hearings are being held at the request of the UN General Assembly, which voted in favor of asking the World Court to weigh in on Israel's legal obligations last December. Officials from the UN and Palestine are scheduled to speak first. The court will also hear from some 40 countries, including the US, China, France, Russia, and Saudi Arabia, over the next 5 days. The hearing is one of the several legal cases against Israel, including South Africa's case at the ICJ and the International Criminal Court's case against Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. This came as Israel is completely cut off all supplies to the 2.4 million residents of the Gaza Strip, struggling with the already severe shortages. Police in London have detained two pro-Palestine activists who tried to voice their anger over the Gaza genocide during a marathon race. The two activists from the Youth Demand Group threw red paint onto the racecourse in protest against Israel's atrocities in Gaza. Police quickly intervened, forcefully detaining them, who were wearing shirts reading "Stop Arming Israel." Israel's indiscriminate killing of civilians in Gaza has sparked hundreds of protests and movements worldwide. Since resuming its Gaza genocide on March 18th, the regime has killed more than 2,100 people and injured nearly 5,600 others. Israel has also blocked all humanitarian aid into the enclave, pushing over 2 million residents, mostly women and children, into severe malnutrition. The U.S. has carried out fresh airstrikes on Yemen, killing dozens of African migrants in a detention center in the northern province of Sada. Yemeni sources are reporting at least 115 deaths and injuries. The Interior Ministry says the center was monitored by the International Migration Organization and the International Committee of the Red Cross. The ministry says intentional targeting of the center is a clear war crime. The incident came hours after separate U.S. airstrikes hit three homes in the capital, Sana'a, killing 8 people, including women and children. The U.S. has been carrying out almost daily attacks on Yemen over the past month or so, allegedly to end the Yemeni strikes on Israeli interests. The Yemeni army, however, says it will continue its operations until the regime halts the Gaza genocide. Yemeni political commentator Hussein al-Bukhaiti was earlier with us. He said the U.S. strikes on civilian sites in Yemen shows Washington is ready to do whatever it takes to stop what he called the Yemeni maritime blockade on Israel.
In the early hour of today, they have targeted with almost 3 strikes a prison, Sa'da city prison, and they have actually conducted those strikes in an area where African migrants, it was a detention center for African migrants in the Sa'da province. The detention center, it held more than 115 African migrants. Body parts are scattered all around the area. Many body parts, they are not actually, they could not confirm the identity of these inmates of that detention center. And this is actually a clear message and show clearly that the United States is, after it has been targeting Yemeni infrastructure, Yemeni homes, and now they are exactly doing the same like the Saudi-led coalition war on Yemen. It's clearly marked for the United States that this actually is not a missile site, it's not a military site, but this actually show you that the United States is doing exactly what the Saudi has been doing in Yemen, is doing exactly what the Zionist regime has been doing in Gaza, and they are doing that in favor of Israel. They want Yemeni to stop their blockade in the Red Sea against the Zionist, and Yemeni demand a symbol, allow food and medicine to enter Gaza, stop the genocide that's happening in Gaza. But is now is clearly that the United States will conduct genocide, will kill Yemeni civilians in favor of the Israeli, in favor of stopping Yemeni from attacking Israel and from blocking the Red Sea.
The Democratic People's Republic of Korea has for the first time confirmed that it sent troops to help Russia in the war against Ukraine. In a report on state news agency Pyongyang Military has said its soldiers helped Russian forces completely liberate the Kursk region near the border with Ukraine. Days earlier, Russian military's chief of staff praised the North Korean troops. In October, reports emerged that North Korean soldiers had been deployed to fight for Russia following the deepening of bilateral ties between Moscow and Pyongyang. The two countries have signed an accord to support each other if either country was dealing with aggression. According to media reports, DPRK has sent an estimated total of 14,000 troops to Russia. The U.S. President Donald Trump's tariff war with global powers has taken a heavy toll on the U.S. economy, fueling higher costs for businesses and consumers alike. Countries like China and some European nations have imposed reciprocal tariffs, deepening the strain on American industries. Despite these setbacks, Trump has vowed the U.S. will ultimately prevail in this battle and see economic recovery. However, growing uncertainty at home over his trade policies continues to cast doubt on that promise. Rachel Hamdan reports from New York.
Global markets and Wall Street have taken a major hit after Trump announced tariffs on major economies around the world like China, Canada, and the EU. Now, amid a global wave of outrage and backlash, he paused those tariffs for 90 days, except for those on China, which caused a trade war between the world's two biggest economies. And after threatening China with tariffs of almost 245%, he dialed it down amid reports of negotiations between the two. This rising conflict led China to warn other countries that in case they decide to negotiate with the U.S. and diminish ties with China in return, that China would impose countermeasures against them. The EU, Ireland, and others have already expressed anger at this tariff campaign by Trump. However, countries like Japan have begun negotiations with the U.S. In order to lessen the brunt. This fear has led investors running to put money towards gold rather than putting them towards American stocks, which have dropped heavily in the market. And also amid Trump calling the Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell, quote, a loser, which has caused further instability in the market here in the U.S. Now, Trump claims that these measures are meant to boost the local economy and to encourage local production. However, economists are warning that this would cost American households $4,000 to $7,000 as a result, and these are due to the price increases on imported cars, groceries, toys, electronics, etc. This is causing a fear among the American public of a looming recession. Now, these measures come alongside Trump's aggressive rhetoric towards immigrants, foreign countries, his war on blockaded Yemen, and his full support of Israel's genocide in Gaza and in Lebanon. However, countries are already gearing up in order to counter these measures and hope to finally distance themselves from the weaponized U.S. dollar that has made its name in the world as the trade currency. Rachel Hamdouin, New York.
And that is a wrap for this hour's World News. Thank you so much for staying with us. Until Friday morning, it's goodbye from me, Bahman Roy.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The following is part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with thousands of people. The meeting took place in the Imam Khomeini Husseiniyah on January 8, 2025, on the anniversary of the 1978 historic uprising against the oppressive Pahlavi regime. We realize that we must immunize ourselves, our thoughts, and public opinion against the enemy's propaganda. They wanted to dishearten people towards the Honorable Imam. Thousands of the Imam's supporters were in prisons, under exile, and subjected to pressure and beatings. Yet, this was not enough. They had to eliminate the Zulfiqar that stirred hearts from near the grave of the commander of the faithful and brought about this massive movement that is the powerful voice of our honorable Imam. They exercised strict control. A single message or declaration from the Imam would rekindle hope in despondent hearts, reinvigorate the very, and heat up the battlefield of the struggle. A single message or declaration from the Imam would rekindle hope in despondent hearts, reinvigorate the very, and heat up the battlefield of the struggle. Subhanallah. The uprising of the people of Qom foiled this scheme. Had you, the people of Qom, not acted on January 9th, this campaign of the article writing and insult would have continued first in one form, then in more complex forms. It would have progressed from targeting the honorable Imam to targeting the clergy, and from the clergy to the essence of religion itself and onward. The people of Qom stopped this progress. They did not let it happen. The same is the case today. Today, the Americans have understood well that their objectives cannot be achieved through hardware means alone. Look at how many people they've killed in Gaza. Tanks came, cannons came, bombs came, machine guns came, UAVs came. They martyred many prominent figures, but they could not extinguish the school of thought. In Lebanon, they martyred someone like Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah of Hezbollah and killed many other prominent figures. These are hardware actions, yet they could not, cannot, and will not eliminate Hezbollah. Therefore, they must resort to software actions. They must use propaganda. This is an important indicator for me, for you, and for the people of Iran today.
You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Hello and welcome to another show of Your Window into Yemen, where we will be discussing all of the latest events unfolding in the country. I am your host, Yusuf Maudi, and we have a very special show for you today. I am joined with Hussein Al-Bukhaiti. He is a Yemeni political commentator. He appears on many programs and is very well educated on all of the events unfolding in the country. Mr. Hussein, thank you for joining us today.
You're welcome, thank you.
I'd like to first start by asking you the first question. Obviously, you've covered the war here in Yemen since 2013, since 2014, when the Ansarullah movement, they began what they call the Islamic Quranic demonstration, and they came all the way from the north province of Saada with their slogan condemning the U.S., calling for the death of U.S. imperialism, Israeli imperialism across the world. Now they are at the forefront of battling the U.S. and Israel. And as a consequence to that, we see the U.S. and even Israel, prior to this military campaign, waste strikes on the Ansar Allah movement, who are now the Yemeni government, the Yemeni authority. Over the years, what do you think has brought us to this very point that we are in right now?
I think at the beginning that the United States has launched a war against Ansarullah, the Houthi in Saada between 2004 and 2010 because of their slogan, which is was against American policy, and it began with death to America, death to Israel. And this was one of the main reasons that the former government of Ali Abdullah Saleh has launched that war against them in Saada, and as well the Saudi. One of the six wars of Saada was one of the war was led by Saudi Arabia. And what was the result? They were not defeated. They have actually expanded across the country. So they are facing the United States from that day. And we see that now that Yemeni, they are facing the United States in a direct battle in the Red Sea, because the United States is the one who's trying to help and to prevent Yemeni from forming a blockade against the Palestinian people.
What do you think about these airstrikes? When they first started about a month ago, and prior to that, it was obviously the Israeli airstrikes on Yemen because of the Yemeni people's position with the Palestinian cause. When these strikes first started over a month ago, a lot of Ansar Allah officials, they issued out statements praising God, because it's almost as if this is the battle that they have been waiting for. They knew that sooner or later it was going to be a conflict. You know, the U.S. was eventually going to declare a military offensive on Yemen. Why is this Yemeni government so focused on this conflict between East and West? Obviously, the Ansar Allah leader said, Abdel Mekah Houthi, he's mentioned that they have a tendency, a propensity, and they are hell-bent on destroying the values of Islam, the same values that resulted into the firm stance and steadfastness of the Yemeni people with the Palestinian people. What are these Islamic values and Islamic principles that have strengthened the Yemeni people to continue their stance with Palestine, despite the continuous airstrikes that we have witnessed here in Yemen for over a month?
The Palestinian case and the Palestinian cause is one of the things that unite all Yemenis, and as well is not only because of our Islamic values, as well as a human value that we have to stand with our brothers. Here in Sana'a, they as well have been saying, if at one point, when the Saudi Arabia launched a war against Yemen, they were saying, if at one point, if the United States or any country will launch a war, especially from the West, against Saudi Arabia, Yemeni will stand with the Saudi, not just with the Palestinian. And about facing the United States, Sayyid Hussein al-Houthi, who was killed, he was the one that created the Ansar Allah movement, was killed by Ali Abdullah Saleh, former government, in 2004. He have said in his speech that we're going to face at one point the United States, and the United States will bring all its battleship and aircraft carrier to our region, to our seas. And he said at that time, we will face them and we will fight them. So Ansar Allah, they have been actually waiting for this type of attack. And here in Sana'a, they said that the war did not only start against Yemen or against Ansar Allah in mid-March when Trump has took power, or through the Prosperity Guardian. The war in Yemen as well has been launched by the Saudi, United Arab Emirates-led coalition. I mean, they have struck Yemen about 300,000 time. That's why I think that those airstrikes that's been conducted from the United States, they actually unite Yemeni more, and they have exposed the United States, who will do whatever it takes. They will come thousands of miles away to protect Israel, to attack Yemen, even though Yemen, at the beginning, they didn't fire a single shot against the United States. And it's a clear proof that the United States actually are the one who protecting the Zionists. They are the one who helping the Zionists, and they cry out loud when Yemeni is trying to help the Palestinian, but it's okay for them to come thousands of miles away to bring weapons to the Zionist state of Israel. If Yemeni could bring and send weapons to the Palestinian people, they will do. But at this point, they only can send weapons against and directly against the Zionist state of Israel.
You mentioned Israel, the Zionist regime. How embedded are they in the decision-making of the U.S. foreign policy? We've obviously heard government officials basically stating that the U.S. government is run by the Zionist lobby. Is this what's happening, or is, you know, do you feel that there's a Zionist Israeli entity that is declaring war on Yemen, and there's also an American Western entity both declaring war on Yemen, or is this more of U.S. serving as a proxy to the ambitions of Israel in the region?
I believe here in Yemen, they said it is not the United States of America, it's the United States of Israel. And since the creation of Israel, the main protection in the world is from the United States for the Israeli regime. We've seen that if there is any resolution at the UN trying to condemn Israel, is always blocked by the United States, by the veto. So it's clearly that the United States is run by the Zionists and by the lobbyists inside what's called the deep state. And this is clearly to everyone in the world, especially after this latest attack against the Palestinian people and the genocide and the killing. It has actually exposed the Zionists more than it has before.
Why do you think the American people haven't risen up? They're becoming more aware that the Zionist regime, the Israeli international lobby, is very, you know, has its hands full of U.S. politicians pulling strings in U.S. foreign policies. Why do you think that, you know, what is your message to the American people who are opposed of this? And we've seen the protests in the U.S. and even at Harvard University taking to the streets in support of Palestine and condemning their government for supporting Israel's bloody genocide in the Gaza Strip. What would your message be to just, you know, being from Yemen and witnessing the revolutions in Yemen and witnessing the mass million-man demonstrations that take place in the streets every Friday? What would your advice be to the American people?
They should actually keep protesting and demonstrating, taking up to the street against the policy of the United States and as well against the Israeli crimes. And they should know when here in Yemen we say death to America, it doesn't mean to the American people. It means to the policy of the United States, who has been actually launching war against many countries in favor for the Zionist state or in favor for their main goal. They are the one who actually has been destroying country. We have seen what they have done in Afghanistan. They are the one who created Al-Qaeda, who created those extremists and terrorists to fight the Soviet Union. But at the end, they are claiming that they are the one who fighting Al-Qaeda. They have created ISIS in Syria and in Iraq. And Trump as well have said clearly that Obama and Hillary Clinton are the one who are created ISIS. But at this moment, we see that they are using ISIS and Al-Qaeda to target country, to launch attack against country. That's why the American people, actually, they should continue their fight to stop the genocide that's happening in Gaza and to stop those policies. Because if they don't, they are going to be responsible for all that. They should face the Israeli regime with these protests because those crime and the support from the United States is actually damaging the reputation of American people everywhere.
The latest airstrikes that happened, the U.S. targeted the port of Ras Isa. Prior to that, Israel targeted the oil and diesel storage facilities in the port of Hodeidah. Why now has the U.S. begun to target? Yesterday, they targeted two graveyards here in the capital, Sana'a, as you're aware of. What is the strategy? Can you paint us a picture? What is the strategy by the U.S.? The U.S. Command Center, they posted a video, I think, a couple of weeks ago, showing what they claim to be where the Ansar Allah government, the Ansar Allah military, storing weapons. They showed a Google Map visual showcasing what they claim is the mountains in northern province of Saada. However, U.S. officials then claim that even though they know where these weapons are being stored, they still can't reach them because of the structure of the mountains in the northern province of Saada and across Yemen. Of course, as you know, one of the the mountains in Yemen are very firm. The structure is unlike any other mountains in the world. They probably don't have the arsenal, or there isn't any capable weapons that are able to penetrate such natural structure. And then we've seen after that, after they came to that realization, we've seen the number of civilian casualties increase as they, you know, started targeting or began to increase their targeting of residential areas and graveyards and the public installations. They're deliberately targeting what it seems Yemen's economic infrastructure. They targeted stone cutting yards. They targeted cotton factories, steel factories, and they targeted a couple of days ago the port of Ras Isa to try to empty out and destroy Yemen's storage tanks that reserve the oil that's distributed throughout Yemen. Why this change in strategy? And please enlighten us a little bit more on Yemen's preparation, because it seems that the Yemeni army wasn't prepared for the attacks that took place by the U.S. on the port of Ras Isa.
I mean, it has been clearly because the United States actually has failed in stopping Yemeni army from forming a blockade against the Israeli ships in the Red Sea. And on the top of that, they came to protect, as they say, the shipping line. But now they cannot even protect themselves. They cannot actually go through the Red Sea. So that's actually something funny. And as well about the storage, and when they have showed that the Google map, it's not about that they don't have the weapons that could destroy it. It's about they don't know where are those weapons stored. We've seen that when they are now trying to, and they have targeted the port of Hodeidah and Ras Isa, it's because a clear failure in stopping our Yemeni military capability. So they do what? They try to form now a blockade against Yemen, not only a blockade, to destroy as well the infrastructure. We remember that Hodeidah port and Ras Isa was closed for many years during the Saudi-led coalition war that has happened for about 9 years. So the United States, if they really want to stop, as they say, fuel and oil to get into Yemen, they could do like the Saudi did, by stopping ships and warning ships not to enter the port of Hodeidah. But their main goal is destruction and to destroy this port. And as well, we've seen at the same time, especially the media that's supported by the Saudi and United Arab Emirates, they always blame that those attacks is not because of the American, is as they say, Ansarullah the Houthi who caused it, because we are attacking Israel. So they are working, the American military strategy is working with the media that's creating those stories that is the Houthi or Ansarullah who are responsible for this attack. If they haven't targeted Israel, they wouldn't do that. If they haven't targeted the Red Sea, ships in the Red Sea that belong to Israel, they wouldn't target those factories. And as you mentioned, they have even targeted a graveyard yesterday, two graveyards here in Sana'a or cemeteries. And people are making fun of that. Someone I have said that in those attacks, his father was killed, even though his father died 20 years ago. So, and someone said they either afraid of Yemeni people who are dead, who are buried in the graveyard. And this show you that the United States actually, they just want to keep attacking civilians, to attack Yemeni infrastructure, because they want to have pressure on the Yemeni. They think that Yemeni will rise up against the Yemeni government or against the Ansarullah, but actually what's happening is the opposite. Tens of thousands of people are joining the Yemeni army. Like I've heard after the attack on Hodeidah, thousands of people from Hodeidah and from the coast has offered to volunteer in the Yemeni army, and they have offered to fight because Yemeni are known. They will take their revenge, whatever it takes, they will do it. And you can just imagine if Yemeni have stood up with the Palestinian people trying to stop the killing of the Palestinian people. This means they will stand as well with themselves to protect Yemen against the United States and against its aggression.
It's almost as if the U.S. is in panic mode, because what you just mentioned, how the Yemeni people, they won't stand for oppression or injustice. If family members of any Yemeni is killed by U.S. airstrikes, they spend the rest of their life seeking revenge. And I think when we look at the bigger picture, you also mentioned how the U.S. is trying to, and they tried militarily to sabotage Yemen. They failed across the board. I think even U.S. officials are admitting to the fact that they haven't been very effective in trying to decimate the Ansarullah military capability. You mentioned that they can, you know, they can impose a blockade by just preventing ships from entering the port of Hodeidah and undocking the fuel. But Trump made a statement a couple days ago or a week ago where he basically warned any company of doing just that. He warned companies and countries of supplying or shipping to the port of Hodeidah, according to him, any area under the control of the Houthis. Is that still happening? Are there still countries and ships shipping to Yemen despite these threats and warnings from Donald Trump?
I think there could be some shipping company will continue because what's happening when Yemen faced the United States in the Red Sea, it has actually exposed the United States and it has shows how weak the United States is. We know that the United States with their aircraft carrier, they have never ever been attacked by any country since the Second World War. So what Yemen have done has actually showed that even though the United States have those aircraft carrier, if they cannot help themselves, if they cannot protect themselves in the Red Sea, that's why I believe that some company will still continue maybe to bring fuel. But if at one point the United States will successfully stop that, I believe that at Yemen at that time they could impose a blockade against not only battleship of the United States or the Zionist State of Israel in the Red Sea, they will impose as well a blockade against all commercial ships that belong to the United States and as well to the UK and to any country in the region.
Why would you say, because that's a good point that you brought up and I want to ask you this, why hasn't the Yemeni army imposed a economic blockade on all Israeli and all European shipments in the Red Sea?
They actually, at the beginning, they start the war, as you see, as stages. We remember the first stage against Israel was to stop Israeli-owned ship. And the second stage was to stop any ship that's going toward Israel or coming out of Israel or from occupied Palestine. It doesn't matter what nationality. But after that, the fourth stage, they have imposed against any shipping, a blockade in the Red Sea against any shipping company. If it has any... if any one of their ships is going to Israel. And I believe that at one point, Yemeni will form this blockade to help the Palestinians. They will try to, as they close the port of Eilat, south of occupied Palestine, they could actually form a blockade against Israeli port in occupied Palestine in the Mediterranean Sea. I believe that Yemeni have the capability to target those ships, and they could as well, without targeting those ships, they could form a blockade against countries like Germany, is one of the main supporters of the Israeli regime.
You're talking about a blockade that Yemen can impose in the Mediterranean Sea or
no,
in the Red Sea?
Yeah, they could impose in the Mediterranean Sea by blocking those ships in the Red Sea. If they form, as an example, a blockade against Germany in the Red Sea, they will demand that Germany should stop its supplies of weapons and money and support of the Israeli regime. So they could actually do that. And look, the Yemeni actually, they have no red line. I believe if Yemen at one point will have the type of missile that could reach Europe, they will target any country that's involved in the war against Yemen. I mean, they don't care about anyone as long as this country is fighting against Yemen. As an example, if they have now a weapon that could reach Britain and the United Kingdom, they will strike it as soon as they have that weapon because the United States is involved in the war against Yemen. And I think this is what every country should do because the United States and UK has been bombing country, attacking country, but those countries actually, they never attack. Those battleship or attack this country or form a blockade. It's the first time in history that someone who doesn't have a navy, who doesn't have a battleship and aircraft carrier, can form a blockade. We know that to form a sea blockade, you need all those battleship and all those aircraft like United States and other country. But Yemen actually formed this blockade using a simple weapons, drones. Some drones only cost a few thousand dollars. Yemeni actually, they will change the future of weapons and which weapon is important. They have shown that the battleship is, cannot stand those attacks. That's why I believe that Yemen is actually, they are teaching the world how to fight and how to stand against the United States.
You mentioned the military capabilities of Yemen. If they had the ability, they would strike any target in the world that is supporting the Israeli regime. I want to ask you, when it comes to just that, involving other countries to the target list, involving perhaps the economies of some of these countries. We're talking about Yemen not only imposing a blockade, a naval blockade on Israeli shipping, but also imposing a blockade on U.S. shipping and also British, German, European shipping in the Red Sea. I think the Ansar Allah movement, the Yemeni government, is capable of doing that, but they haven't done that yet. Is this a strategic move? Could this be on the horizon, given the fact that, as you mentioned, these European countries are supporting Israel's genocide and the U.S. is obviously committing its own form of massacres here in Yemen? When do you think it will reach to that point where the Yemeni army imposes naval blockade on all Western shipping through the Red Sea?
I believe it could happen in the coming weeks because Yemen hasn't imposed that blockade because their main target, it was Israeli ships. They have successfully stopped all ships that linked to Israel to go through the Red Sea. And after that, they have targeted, after the United States have formed that so-called Prosperity Guardian, Yemeni army start to target it. Why they have now blocked those shipping company that belong to UK and United States and as well to Germany? At the beginning, they only want to target the United States military ship. But I believe after those attack against Hodeidah port, against Ras Isa, and all those mass killing, this is when Yemeni gonna do and target those ship and maybe sink those ship. And there could be civilians and those worker on those ship, they might be killed by those attack. Yemeni can say, look, we haven't done that. Is they might say to have been bombing us, they have bombed the port, they have killed hundreds of people. So is the international community should take responsibility to stop attack. And if the United States want to face Yemen, I mean, they could come to Yemen. Why attacking and targeting civilians? This is exactly what the Zionist state is doing. It's so easy to kill and to target civilians, but it's much difficult to stop the attack that's coming from Yemen.
Speaking of attacks from Yemen, we've heard reports over the past couple of days that the U.S. and Israel are supporting and putting together this military front to support and to initiate and activate the Saudi-backed mercenaries, the various different Yemeni factions scattered in the south of the country and in some parts of Hodeidah. Basically, the U.S. financing them and preparing and coordinating with them to put together some form of ground military offensive against the Yemeni government. What can you tell us about this? I mean, do you see the cards stacking for this play to happen? Do you see this unfolding in the near future?
Yeah, I'm 100% sure that this will take place. But let me as well say, when the United States has launched war against Yemen, Yemeni actually they said finally, because we have not got the weapons to go and to reach United States itself, they came to us. Mm-hmm. They came closer to us, so they make themselves a target. And of course, there are reports that the United States might support a ground attack by the mercenaries of the Saudi-backed forces and as well the United Arab Emirates. And Yemenis, actually, if this will happen, this actually will be better for us. Why? Because instead of only target U.S. aircraft carrier, by this ground attack, this means that Yemeni at that point have bigger targets. They will target Saudi Arabia. They will target United Arab Emirates. They will target all the United States bases in the region, and especially the oil and gas infrastructure. They have warned they will do that.
But don't you think that this may be part of a clever plan by the Israeli regime to add more enemies to Yemen? Because right now, as you mentioned, and this is something that I think should be proceeded cautiously, because you're talking about imposing a naval blockade on U.S. shipping and Western shipping. Maybe could this be what Israel wants, and even opening a front against the Saudi-led coalition, and even targeting some military sites in Saudi Arabia, which would render the ceasefire between Yemen and Saudi Arabia as worthless, which would then pave the way for Saudi Arabia to open their skies to U.S. military operations on Yemen. Although that this could very well be a reality soon, because Yemen, when you push Yemenis to the to the corner and they have no other choice, they will fight. But don't you think that this could be part of a clever, insidious, cover Israeli plan so that Israel is not the only one on the target list? when it comes to these military operations and the naval blockade?
Of course, I think that Israel is pushing for that, and that's why at this point Yemeni are trying, as an example, not to to target Saudi Arabia, even though most of the supplies and fuel for the fighter jets that's going toward the U.S. Aircraft carrier Truman in the Red Sea is coming through Saudi Arabia. Yemeni, they do want actually to do that, but as you say, they are pushing Yemeni into the corner, and they are trying to kill Yemeni, to destroy Yemen. Yemen will do actually whatever it takes. The Israeli plan and the United States plan and war against Yemen, we say here in Yemen, it started in 2015 with a 9-year of war that resulted in 18,000 Yemeni civilians that were killed by direct airstrike, mostly women and children. It's the same fighter jet that's bombing Yemen, is exactly the same type that the Saudi have, with the full support of the United States. 300,000 Yemeni died because of preventable diseases like cholera, malaria, and starvation because of the blockade of the Saudi and because of the bombing of infrastructure, water infrastructure, electricity. Of course, there will be more enemy towards the Yemeni, but we haven't got anything else actually to do. The world and the Western country only respect the strength. As they say in the United States, there is a saying, if you want peace, you should carry your weapons. So this is actually what Yemeni now doing. They will show them the full force of Yemeni, and as well, Yemen still under occupation of the United States, of United Arab Emirates and Saudi. If the Saudi doesn't want any attack, or they don't want to get involved, they should not allow their mercenary to be helped and to support them to launch a ground attack in favor to protect Israel.
Very well said, Hussein Abouhaiti. Thank you for joining us today. It was a great program. That is, unfortunately, the only time we have left. Thank you for joining us in this week's episode of Your Window into Yemen. Stay safe and stay informed.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
We seek refuge from Satan the cursed in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, dear audience. Welcome to a new episode of Spring of the Truth from IRIB English Radio. This is Zainab Mousavi, and what we do in this program is to talk about certain viewpoints and parts of the speeches of Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayhi, who was the great founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, and then try to shed light and talk more about some of these beautiful and elegant viewpoints. Well, about reading books and learning knowledge, Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi said, knowledge is the most powerful weapon for the liberation of mankind. Books are the source from which this knowledge flows. You know, the quotation from Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi emphasizes the profound significance of knowledge and books in the liberation of humanity. From Islamic perspective, knowledge is not merely an academic pursuit. It is a divine gift that enables individuals to discern truth from the falsehood and to navigate the complexities of life in accordance with Islamic values. In Islam, the pursuit of knowledge is highly encouraged. The Holy Book of Quran states, "A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim." Say, "Are those who know equal to those who do not know?" Surah Al-Zumar, verse number 9. As you see, this verse underscores the superiority of the knowledgeable, highlighting that understanding leads to enlightenment and liberation from ignorance. Imam Ali alayhi salam also emphasized the importance of knowledge by stating, "He who has no knowledge has no light." This reflects the Shia belief that knowledge illuminates the path towards justice, moral integrity, and spiritual growth. Books are repositories of knowledge, serve as vital tools in this journey. They carry the teachings of the Holy Prophets, the Imams, and the scholars throughout history. The traditions of the Holy Prophet ﷺ further stress the importance of seeking knowledge, with reports indicating that it is an obligation for every Muslim, regardless of gender, to learn knowledge. In essence, Imam Khomeini's assertion highlights that true liberation stems from the acquisition of knowledge, which empowers individuals to resist oppression and injustice. Books facilitate this journey, providing the necessary tools for personal and societal transformation in line with divine guidance, ultimately leading to a more just and enlightened world, inshallah. Okay, well, dear listeners, it seems that we run out of time for this episode. For ending, let me just recite the sentence of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh about reading books and learning knowledge once more. He said, "Knowledge is the most powerful weapon for the liberation of mankind. Books are the source for which this knowledge flows."
Every night and every day,
every night and every day, never forget to say,
La ilaha illallah, never forget to say.
There was a spring of truth, a selection of Imam Khomeini's viewpoints.
Never forget to say, La ilaha illallah.
Palestine Declassified.
Hello, I'm Chris Williamson, and this is Palestine Declassified, where we expose the Israeli regime's global war against solidarity with the illegally occupied people of Palestine. In today's show, we'll be laying bare the moral depravity of Israeli society, which has repeatedly demonstrated that it's got no sense of the difference between right and wrong. In our first report, Latif Abu Chakra explains how rape and sexual abuse have been normalised inside the Zionist entity.
Shoshana Struk, the daughter of far-right Israeli settlements minister Orit Struk, who has accused both of her parents and one of her brothers of raping her as a child, has published a video alleging that they filmed her rape for use as child pornography, and that criminals have threatened her with the publication of the video for accusing them. Ms. Struk traveled to Italy to disclose her allegations, but has now returned to Israel, where she asks Israeli police to protect her from her parents and from the blackmailers. But who is Orit Struk? Orit Struk helped to spread the totally false fabricated claims that the Palestinian resistance committed sexual assaults during Al-Aqsa flood. She, of course, has stated that there is no such thing as a Palestinian people. Strzok is part of the fascist Jewish power party led by Ben-Gvir and sits in the Knesset as a part of the National Religious Party, Religious Zionism. In 2007, Orit Strzok's son, Zveki Strzok, and his friends had entered a Palestinian neighborhood, captured a 15-year-old boy, handcuffed and beat him, stripped him, and allegedly hit him with an ATV, an all-terrain vehicle, before leaving him tied up in a field. The victim escaped hours later, suffering from severe injuries. But the Strzok family is not the only one in the Zionist colony seemingly addicted to abuse. And nor is abuse confined to the far right, the settler movement, or ultra-Orthodox Haredi sects. There is a sickness which permeates the whole settler society. Most Israeli men say forced sex with acquaintance is not rape, as reported in an academic survey. 6 out of 10 men said forced sex was not rape, and so did 4 out of 10 women. The results illustrated, the author said, the Israeli public's tolerant attitude to rape by an acquaintance. Gang rapes are a common feature of Israeli life. In one particularly awful case in Eilat in 2020, a 16-year-old was raped by 30 men who reportedly stood in line waiting for their turn. In 2018, there was reportedly a rise in high-profile gang rape cases in schools. A report found that most victims, 63% of reported gang rapes in 2018, were girls between the ages of 12 and 18. If anything, rape is seen as a sort of right for the Jewish supremacists who run the colony. Who can forget the hero's welcome for a gang of Jewish rapists returning from Cyprus after their crimes had been revealed? Haaretz ran the headline, "Sex party boys cleared of rape in Cyprus get hero's welcome in Israel." There were shouts of Israeli pride from family and friends at Ben-Gurion Airport. Then they opened a bottle of champagne.
As usual, I'm joined in the studio by David Miller, who's the UK's foremost scholarly critic of Israel and our resident expert. He's a co-director of the Lobbying Watchdog Spinwatch and a senior research fellow at the Centre for Islam and Global Affairs at Istanbul Zeyim University. And I'm delighted to welcome back Vanessa Bealey as our guest contributor today. She's a courageous, award-winning British investigative journalist, and she's been investigating the topic that we're discussing today. Vanessa has been described by the British National Council for the Training of Journalists as one of the UK's most respected journalists. Welcome to the show. David, what do you make of this this character, Orit Strzok, then?
So she's the Minister for Settlements in the government, and she appears to preside over a family of abusers.
Yeah.
Her son, as was shown in the report there, was involved in torturing a young Palestinian and beating his goat to death. In the case of the daughter here, who's Shoshana, who has made these allegations, she said that both her parents abused her and one of her brothers. It's not clear if it was the same brother who beat the goat to death or not, but she's saying also that she's been blackmailed, and so that if she reveals this, that they will release the footage. And so it's a really vile sort of collection of activities. It's perfectly clear that she approved of her son's activities when they tortured that young Palestinian child. You can sort of see the photograph, I think, in the clip there, and you can see that she's actually smiling when he gets off effectively with light punishment in that case. So this is someone who's a settler, who's in illegal settlement, and who really demonstrates what everything that's sick about Israeli society, at the very heart of Israeli society.
Sure, yeah. Well, Vanessa, I mean, the cruelty of the Strzok clan, I mean, it's not a one-off, is it?
Yeah, of course it's an aberration, and the majority of the acts carried out by members of the Zionist community in Israel, whether it's the secular, the extreme religious communities, or the so-called liberal progressive communities, are the same, and it's an endless stream of information about ritual rape, about child rape and abuse that is effectively condoned by the state of Israel because it's rarely prosecuted or condemned. And so therefore, the acts that we heard about in this particular case are in a long line of such acts, particularly against children and even by relatives and family members.
Well, David, what do you make of that that survey about attitudes in Israel towards rape?
This is a survey conducted by Israeli academics, yeah. not by outside